So we just learned about the passing of actor Richard Hurd, who portrayed Admiral Paris on Star Trek Voyager. Our condolences and our thoughts go out to his family. And we would just like to take this time to commemorate him.
Yeah, I want to say it was a real honor to work with Richard Hurd. And I was very proud that he got to play my father. He was always a lovely man at conventions. I saw him for years after we made the show around the world at conventions. And he was always so positive and gracious and kind. And I just really appreciated that he was the man that played my father on the show. So we'd love to just take a moment of silence in honor of Richard Hurd. Thank you.
Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers. We are a weekly podcast that discusses episodes of Star Trek Voyager in chronological order. Your two hosts along this podcast journey are myself, Garrett Wong, aka Ensign Harry Kim, and Robert Duncan McNeil, who portrayed Lieutenant Tom Paris. If you're interested in either an extended version of this podcast or the extended video version of this podcast, both of which include added bonus segments, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
Your driveway all done? Is there everything's all fixed with your driveway?
Got my driveway done. I was working today. Let's see what house projects I was doing. I was going along the fence line with my wheelbarrow and pulling off the ivy that tends to grow along my fence, and I can't stand it. It looks so junky. So I was going around the perimeter of the backyard, pulling ivy and weeds, and it was yard day.
So you're not trimming the ivy, you're pulling the ivy.
Well, because I live in Georgia and there's a lot of ivy down here. Like for some reason, everybody loves ivy. So the neighbors have ivy growing in their trees and all over the place, but it comes through the fence, like between the, you know, the pieces, the boards, it'll start growing through. And so I go around and I pull it out and I rip it and it feels good. So.
This sounds like the prequel to like a Judge Judy episode where you're going to sue your neighbor for the ivy coming
through. For the ivy coming through, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this week's episode is The Cloud.
Yes, The Cloud. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So for those of you who are with us on Patreon, we are about to play a little game of What Do We Remember?
Yes.
And as for everybody else, we'll be right back with our recap of The Cloud after this break. Okay, guys, we are back from watching the episode The Cloud. This is a fun one.
Wow. I don't think it was exactly what I thought. I mean, a little bit, like that. My vague memory of the cloud affecting the whole ship, but a couple things I didn't remember. I didn't remember Sandrine's was in this episode, although we talked about it. You mentioned that before.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember what Sandrine's was about. So that whole thing was amazing to watch. And then I didn't remember all the stuff with the spirit guide, the animal guide, all that stuff that Janeway did.
Yeah.
I mean, once it started playing, I was like, oh my God, I do remember this story. So we'll get it. We'll talk about that as we go through it. But
definitely.
Yeah.
So at the very beginning, I find it interesting because they talk about, it's the captain's log, and she talks about the journey home has already been several weeks long now. Mm-hmm. So, even though this is technically what fifth or sixth episode of Voyager, we are already several weeks into this journey.
Yep.
Also, this episode was written by Brandon Braga, directed by David Livingston. So this is...
No, the story was by Brannon Braga. The script was Michael Piller and I forget the other writer. I don't have it in front of me. So the the script was written by Michael Piller and another writer.
Gotcha.
Brannon had the story, which I found interesting in a place I'll tell you about later.
David Livingston is the director. And I think this is the first time David directed one of our episodes.
Yes.
David Livingston was, I guess he was the supervising producer on TNG before.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there was always this fight between or tension between David Livingston and the crew, specifically Marvin Rush, the director of photography, because David literally would take multiple takes to get something done. Right.
David was a perfectionist and he was very particular. And David had our longest days, and we had some long days, but David Livingston was consistently the longest director. This was his first episode. There's a couple things, and I'll bring it up as we go through. I remember specifically thinking, oh, David's doing some different things than other directors had done. And we'd only been doing it a few episodes, but I noticed immediately when we were filming that he was very particular about some lenses. He was using different lenses and very aware of these kind of close wide angle lenses. He used a split diopter lens, which now I know what that is, but that's the first time I ever heard of that. A split diopter is where you keep one part of the frame in focus and then the other part that's way back here also in focus. So it allows you to have this kind of unnatural image. And I'd never seen that before. David Livingston does that in this episode. He used that lens in Sandrine's a couple of times. And I can talk about that when we get there. But I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you could say that he was a bit of an auteur when he was directing and that he did pay extreme attention to the type of lenses he used, whether it was, he loved that fisheye lens, which I hate the fisheye lens. And he would always try to do a close up on me using a fisheye lens. And it just makes you look like you're in an episode of the Twilight Zone. And I would say to him, I go, David, can you please just use a regular lens on me? But off the bat in the engineering set, you see that just the camera angle that he takes, he's always looking at B'Elanna from, everything's looking above because he's showcasing that second floor of engineering with all the plexiglass walkways there, which I totally forgot about that it was plexiglass. I thought it was like a great, you know, a grated sort of metal type of, you know, industrial flooring up there, but no, it was totally clear, right?
Yeah,
which may have, you know, who knows, maybe people were watching this and then that became the impetus behind, now you can go to the Grand Canyon and there's that clear walkway that walks all the way out there. A lot of different, you know, architecture.
Yeah, it's much more common now. I think when we built that set, having glass floors was not something you saw often. So, and you definitely noticed it. You could tell that David was looking for new angles and trying to be different on this episode visually. So it definitely felt a little different.
There was also a section, that Janeway is still in her little, you know, captain's log. She says, maybe more than ever now, they need me to be larger than life. I only wish I felt larger than life. And then she says, computer, delete that last sentence. So you see a little bit of
comedy.
Some comedy and hesitation also in her and unsureness of what to do because, you know, we're lost. We're so far away from home. It's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I made a note of that same line, but I took it as kind of the comedy, I wish I was larger than life. Wait a minute. Never mind. Delete that. It was kind of, you know, I took it as the comedy version of that line. And I thought she was very funny. She had some funny moments.
She did.
The doctor had some funny moments in this episode.
Yeah.
There was a lot of good stuff. Yeah, I had that same note. I also, when she first came in, you and I were sitting there in the mess hall.
Yes.
And she's trying to be chummy with the crew. And we don't know that. So she comes over for a little small talk. Mm-hmm. I love how you had the, immediately you came out with the, you know, they have an old Chinese saying, an old Chinese curse or something. I was like, oh my God, really? Are you going
to? But this, go ahead. I want to hear what you're. Well,
my take is like, I forget that this show is 25 years ago, and there's a lot of things in here I found I'll be honest, offensive in this episode.
Okay. Okay.
I thought that was, I found the way it, there was no subtlety or nuance to the way it was scripted. Yeah. You know, you immediately yeah. came out with, well, there's an old Chinese saying. It felt right. like so stereotypical that, oh, the Chinese guy's going to have a saying on the tip of his tongue. He's going to, yeah, give us a little Chinese wisdom, just like the Indian guy. He's going to have some wisdom too. And
right.
Here's what I think. I'll be honest. This is global about this whole episode. It yes. felt like a bunch of middle-aged white guys trying to write lines for the Asian guy, the Native American guy, the Sondrian's bar. I thought Tom Paris came off like the biggest misogynist pig I've ever seen in my life. I couldn't yeah. believe it. I was like, oh my God. even Kes and Neelix, their little sexy time moment. I don't know. It just felt like a bunch of middle-aged white guys. And I love Michael Piller and Brandon, don't get me wrong, but yeah. it was a different time.
Yeah.
And I that very first line when you said, well, there's an old Chinese saying or.
Yeah. Can I just repeat what it was? I said, there's an ancient Chinese curse, Captain. Yeah. May you live in interesting times. Mealtime is always interesting now that Neelix is in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Now, what struck me about this is it's very clear that Ensign Harry Kim, the last name Kim, everybody knows that this is a Korean last
name. Korean name, yes.
It's not Chinese, okay? So now let us just talk about this. My character mentions there's an ancient Chinese curse. Now, later on, probably throughout the 7 years, 5 or 6 more times, I will say there's an old Chinese saying, Paris, and I will say something to you. And this really blows my mind because at the end of Voyager, the final season, they had already written the pilot episode for Enterprise, what was going to follow after we were done. Yeah. And at that time, a U.S. spy plane had crash landed in China and the Chinese were holding on to it. The U.S. government then said, hi, China, can we have our plane back? And China said, what plane? Because they were stalling because they were tearing everything apart on that spy plane. They wanted to reverse engineer every piece of technology there. The talk was this could cause an international incident between China and the U.S. The U.S. could go to war with China over this. And so I marched myself into the executive producer's office and I said, why don't you make the character of Hoshi Sato in Enterprise a Chinese character so that this could be goodwill towards between U.S. and China, right? U.S.-China relations. And Brannon said to me, he says, what? Why would we need to do that? We already have a Chinese character in Star Trek. I said, well, who? And he goes, you, Kim's Chinese. And this is season 7. Robbie, my jaw hit the floor. I was so shocked.
I'm saying it's a different time and it doesn't excuse it. I'm not making excuses.
Right.
And all of us were there. So you know, you were there, you said the line, we all could have done things differently. So all of our barometers were a little differently calibrated. Let's say that. Right. Robert Beltran could have certainly had an opinion about Chakotay and all of this frickin' stereotypical bullshit Native American stuff that they threw into this episode.
Yeah.
I'll just say I'm working on a show right now called Resident Alien, and we have a native
character.
Yeah, Native American in the story, but we're shooting in Canada. First Nations is the words they use up there. Right. But we have worked so hard to make our native culture authentic. We actually rewrote an entire storyline when we found out an actress we thought was actually native could not prove her native heritage. So we were like, we're not going to put people on here who we do not know are real native actors. We're not going to have a Mexican guy imitating a Native American. It's mm-hmm. insulting. We're not yeah. going to tell stories that are not authentically vetted by real research and by tribal consultants who tell us that that's okay. So I know that that was not done on Star Trek. I know that they did not. Let me put it this way. I don't know it. Looking at the way that I watched this episode and how it was done, I don't believe that they really vetted the Native American culture in this episode very thoroughly. And they certainly didn't vet the fact that Harry Kim is not Chinese. So, and then the misogynist part of Tom Paris, I found offensive. So, I participated in that. So all of our barometers were kind of off and I can only recognize it now and say, wow, call it what it is.
My barometer, I don't think it was off. I actually justified that Kim, while he was at Starfleet Academy, took a lot of Chinese studies courses, you know, that he was a Chinaphile, like into everything China. So that's how I justified it. I didn't sit there and go, hey guys, he's Korean, right?
But let me ask you this. Did they ever articulate, do they have lines that refer to his Korean heritage? Did they ever talk about Korean food or Korean culture? That's what I'm saying. The implication, you could have done your own mental gymnastics, but the implication was Harry Kim was Chinese and he's not. That is not a Chinese name, put it that way.
Correct. Correct.
Maybe in the future, some of these borders and boundaries won't be the same, but still, culturally, the name Kim is a Korean name. Anyway.
And if they had known, if I had known that they had thought this was, like, if the breakdown said, this character, Ensign Harry Kim, is a young Chinese Starfleet officer, I would have immediately said, hey, guys, Kim is not Chinese. The translation of Kim into the Chinese name is Chin. So Chin. So it should have been Ensign Harry Chin is what it should have been.
Wow. Okay? Yep. Probably should have.
Yeah. And just so that we can bring this up now, when you spoke about Tom Paris as misogynistic, the only thing that came off as really offensive to me is when later towards the end, we're in Sandrine's bar with all the rest of the crew members, and you turn to the Ricky character and you tell her that I'm trying to set the Indian up. Like, just the way you called him the Indian, I was like,
I agree.
You said what?
I agree. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Like, I did not recall that. And when I saw it, I literally wrote.
Yeah, what did you write? I want to know.
I wrote Indian in all caps. I wrote Indian. I said Indian. Oh my God. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. I'm sorry. And it's funny because this show, was trying to be such a forward-thinking, modern, female
diverse cast
and female empowerment and very modern in so many ways. And yet it felt just buried in very old stereotypes, this whole episode. So we got to get through it. We've been talking for 15 minutes and we haven't even gotten into the episode, but.
Okay. So basically we come across this nebula, right? Janeway is, before that, Janeway's asking for coffee from Neelix, and Neelix pours this, what looks like chocolate pudding, into this cup, right? This thick pudding.
Or poop.
Your poop.
Chocolate pudding or poop.
Right.
And then he drank it, which I thought was awesome. I thought, by the way, Ethan Phillips was amazing in this episode as Neelix. I just find him hilarious and funny, and I thought he was great.
Well, I didn't remember him being so... ornery, because he was really just, he said these guys are all idiots. He calls basically Janeway an idiot, and
I love that, though. I wish that they had kept more of that. I think because Ethan is such a sweet human being, they started writing Ethan as a soft, sweet, lovable guy, and that was not as interesting. I think they should have kept him ornery anyway. All the coffee stuff, I thought that starts becoming her signature. This episode begins that whole coffee thing.
Yeah. And I've done that impersonation of her voice, that line, there's coffee in that nebula. I've done that dozens of times at conventions. Yeah. And so we're looking for more energy, and we come across this nebula that seems to have some type of energy stores in it.
Yeah.
I like the interaction between Tuvok and Kim on the bridge when he's messaging me, telling me that he was.
I didn't remember that you guys had had this sort of private conversation from across the bridge.
Yeah.
And I thought, why didn't we do that more often? Like that could have been a fun, we could have done that every single episode. You know, I could have said something to you like, oh my God, Harry, you know, whatever. We could have had real fun.
That would have been
a great thing to keep going. And I wish we had.
And Robbie, that to me started kind of going into the territory of Orville. Like that's something Orville would completely do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And for him to have this private conversation with me after I say, I've never seen anything like it. And then he's like, and so Jim, the junior officers will be worried if you use this type of term. And then I call him out on exactly, basically doing the same thing again later, right? And you're right. Never again. I mean, can you even recall another time that any person on the ship has a private conversation with another person on their comm badge? I don't think so. I think that was probably it. They never really explored that.
No,
you're right.
No.
We really, really, really could have used that to enhance the show more.
Yeah.
All right. And then now you come, you show up, Kes and Neelix kissing for the first time. Is that right?
Kes and Neelix getting hot and heavy. Yeah. I literally, when we got to that point, I thought, is this the nebula that makes everybody feel sexy? Like I literally thought, wow, they're getting so hot and bothered that maybe the nebula is doing it. It seems so out of character.
Is this the rave nebula? What are we doing in here? Exactly. No, totally.
And I love, in that same scene when he calls us idiots, I love that. I thought it was great. Although I've got to say the nebula outside, when it looked like it was hitting the windshields and stuff, it didn't look like, it was not our best visual effect.
It looked like jello.
Yeah.
Kind of like a jello-y kind of effect. And I thought, they could have improved on that for sure.
Yeah.
This is also the episode where you break into my quarters, which was so spooky. And your line is hilarious. It's just when you say to me, you say to me that what was the comment that you said? Something
I said the things you'd be surprised the things you learn in prison. I wrote this down.
In prison.
I literally, when I heard myself say that, I was like, ew, what are we saying?
Because then you know where did your mind go when you heard that line? Because you literally, you'd be surprised the things you learn in prison. It was sort of like,
well, after breaking into another dude's room.
Yes.
And then I say, you'd be surprised the things you learn in prison. Did I break into other prisoners' rooms and rape them or something?
I don't know. I mean, the only thing worse is if you surprised me in like the sonic showers and you came in behind me like, Harry, your soap.
It was just, this was not my favorite Tom Paris episode.
And then, of course, I'm going to... As we do these discussions of these episodes, I'm gonna pull out the weirdest lines that Harry ever had. And one of them would have to be, after you wake me up, I walk out explaining why I wear the mask is because my roommate is Star Trek Academy.
Womb.
Yes.
You're like, no, I remember my mother's womb. And I was like,
being in my mother's room, which is like crazy and kooky and bizarre. And who writes that stuff? So
yeah.
Yeah. So then we enter the holodeck program. You show me your little holodeck program, Paris 3, Sandrine's bar. It's a bar in Marseille, France, and how much you love French people and French things. We see Ricky. And this is interesting. You say, and this is Ricky. I include her in all my holo programs. But yet later in Captain Proton, she is not the woman that's screaming in there. That's somebody else. That's a different actress. Okay. We have a blonde actress in that one. And what's hilarious is Angela Dorman, who plays Ricky in this episode. In my conversations with her off camera, she told me that that she's a natural blonde. So she would have been perfect for Captain Proton screaming later.
That's funny.
That holo program. Yeah. How was that working with her?
I don't remember Angela so well. I remember Judy Geeson, actually.
Okay.
I remember Judy because Judy had been married to a man I know, Christopher Tabori. And Chris had directed me in a production of Romeo and Juliet. And he's a wonderful director and a great actor, Chris Tabori. And And so I talked to Judy Geeson a lot about Chris and about the theater and just all that. So I think for that off camera time, I spent most of my time talking to Judy. But I have to say, I hated it. I thought it was creepy. That line when he says, I put her in all my holo programs. I mean, holodeck programs, let's all be honest. There's a lot of pornography that gets created in holodeck programs because that's where you work out your porno habits, right? Or your whatever.
Yeah.
That's certainly, I know fans have talked about that a lot. Like, oh, yeah. What happens on your private holodeck programs? So to even say that, like, oh yeah, she's in all my holodeck. And then she's all over me. And like, I had to program her that way. It just, that whole thing speaks so poorly of who Tom is.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we, just like we have to say the lines as scripted, we have to play the scenes as scripted. And I look at that scene and I'm like, well, I guess I trusted the writers. I trusted the producers that they were making a story about Tom Paris that they believed in. But as I look at that episode, I'm like, that dug me into a hole as a character, I feel.
Okay.
That was very deep. It was very unattractive. It was creepy. Yeah. It was gross. I didn't like it. Anyway. Right.
The captain's ready room. Chakotay comes in holding the medicine bundle, which honestly it looked like a guinea pig that he was holding at first. And he takes Janeway through.
I'll say another thing just to compare to my current show, Resident Alien, that I'm doing with our Native American consultants. We had to create medicine bundles and things like that. We had to create a hair cutting ceremony for when someone dies, you cut your hair. We had to put this all together, and we actually took photographs and sent it to the consultant and made sure that every piece that we were using was exactly authentic. I felt the same way about those props. Like, oh my God, it looks like a guinea pig. It does not look, it's just so cliche and over the top and it looks fake.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I found that offensive too.
It definitely is. It looks fake, but I will say, as offensive as it comes off, it's still the attempt by the middle-aged white guys to show some culture, some native culture, at least what their idea of native culture is.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I guess you can.
Okay.
At the time, I think they were, that was the intention. I don't think there were bad intentions.
Right. They weren't bad intentions.
Looking at it 25 years later, we can do much better now than we did then. And I certainly know I can. So.
And in reality, Robbie, since this is an early episode, this was actually filmed 26 years ago. It was filmed in 1994. We premiered in 95, but this is a 1994 filmed episode.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that we see Janeway's spirit animal is a lizard / salamander, which is foreshadowing Threshold?
Yeah. Yes, it is. I think it, well, the story was Brannon Braga's story, right? This was Brannon's.
Yeah.
And Brannon wrote Threshold later on.
There you go.
Maybe he tied in the spirit animal and all that, yeah?
Maybe that's Brannon Braga's spirit animal. Maybe that's why it keeps coming back in over and over again.
Exactly.
And we learned that word Akuchimoya, which I used to joke with Robert Beltran on the set all the time. I would literally...
Akuchimoya, he said... He said something else earlier. He said Nuanka and Pakita.
Yeah, Pakita. Pokemon, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Pokemon. And before the Akuchimoya, let's just go back. The first time we hear Zimmerman's name mentioned.
Oh, yes, yes.
Is in sickbay. I found it really, it was a very small detail, but when B'Elanna comes in with the doctor, they're so combative with each other. And then later on, it was nice to see the doctor sort of set B'Elanna up to be the hero when he's like, oh, you know what to do, right, B'Elanna? And she sort of comes up with a solution. So that was a nice, I liked that, because at first I thought, why are they so combative? But later on it paid off.
Right.
He mentions Zimmerman. I also saw Bob Picardo stroking the computer graph like a computer might stroke another computer. I thought that was very sensual.
I did not pick that up.
It was very subtle, but he was like, oh yes, I see in here. And it was very, there was a lot of sexuality and sensuality.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Most definitely. I agree with you. Yes. But the whole name Zimmerman, now we know the programmer's name is Zimmerman, because everyone always says the doctor doesn't have a name. Well, it's in essence, it is Zimmerman. Yep. And here's a little side piece of trivia. That is Jeri Ryan's maiden name.
Is it really?
Yeah, because she comes from both mother and father are 100% German. If you went into Jeri Ryan's parents' house, which she will tell you, on the walls, there are pictures of relatives from World War II that are wearing U.S. military garb, and also relatives that served in the German army wearing German military garb. So they're 100% German, and Zimmerman is her maiden name, which is hilarious because that's also the doctor's name, and how the universe just kind of like, you know, these things like that. It's crazy.
All right. Moving on.
Oh, Akuchimoya. I would joke with him. I would say, Akuchimoya, we are far from the sacred places of our grandfathers. We are far from the bones of our people. We are far from our lunch break. Like, I would always like come up with like things.
Akuchimoya. I did think that there was a lot of sexual energy in this whole episode from everybody. Yeah. I thought Kate Mulgrew's interest in finding her animal guide was slightly, it was intense.
Yeah.
She was like so wanting to find her animal guide because it almost felt, you know, and she was flirting with Chakotay and over it. I found that really interesting. Yeah. Also, later on, when Neelix says, I don't want to go back in that place. Oh, let me and Kes stay on my ship and we'll wait for you. I was like, wait a minute, what? We've got his ship on board? Why didn't that ever come up again?
Yeah, like, we never see a ship again, really.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, where would we store it? It's a very small ship. It's not like the Enterprise D. I mean, we have a small ship. Where is this damn ship?
We just sort of forgot that we were, I don't think there was ever another mention, but it was interesting to know that we still had a ship on board.
Loose end number one, right?
Yeah.
So we have that one.
I thought when we did go back into the nebula, our shakes were finally on point. I feel like we finally had found our shaking technique, and that was really good. I didn't think when the ship was diving like down like that, I didn't think that was a great effect either. It looked a little, it was okay.
You know, I just realized our podcast listeners are not going to understand when you go,
it's using your hand. It's kind of like diving down. It's kind of a weird angle. It didn't look dynamic. It wasn't the greatest.
You know, Robbie, how I make fun of your yes, ma'am all the time. Yeah. Well, you did a very dejected yes, ma'am in this episode, because we talk about Janeway says, well, let's hope it has a slow digestive process, because we're going back in the nebula, and you go, yes, ma'am. Like, you were like really kind of bummed out. Like, we're in the belly of the whale. Yes, ma'am. It wasn't as invigorated as normal.
There's a lot of ways to do a yes, ma'am, Garrett.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an infinitely expressive phrase.
I agree.
And I feel like in 7 years, I expressed every version of yes, ma'am that you could possibly.
You had numerous versions of yes, ma'am. And talking about the physicalness of this show, the sexiness of the show, did you notice Janeway keeps her hand on your shoulder towards the end of that episode?
Yeah, like, I did.
The entire time. And I'm wondering, again, is this a choice because the original plan was for Paris and Janeway to be a couple? I mean, I don't think so.
I think by now they were already interested in Chakotay and the captain. That was the place they were going to go.
Okay.
I liked Neelix coming out with snacks on the bridge. I wish he did that more often.
Okay, tell me why you like it. Just because
we're shooting a long day. It'd be nice to have snacks.
Okay, because, you know, I'd have to say throughout the run of Voyager, whenever I go to conventions, there's a lot of people who throw shade at Neelix, you know, that say, that, oh God, I hate that character. And I'm wondering, was that scene part of the beginning of the dislike of the Neelix character? Sort of like, wait a minute, you're not supposed to do that on a Starfleet bridge. You're bringing in snacks? Like, this is not children playtime.
I like the snacks just because I thought it was charming and cute, but you're right. I think that the initial concept of that character, when he was so ornery and he was in that junk ship and he had the cool coat, that would have been he turned so quickly into this, like, the goofy chef's hat and serving people. And I think when he was ornery, he was much more interesting. So, and you know, calling himself the morale officer, like he should have called himself the Delta Quadrant police, and I'm not letting you do this. Like, it would have been more interesting to see, because he's a charming human being. Ethan Phillips is one of the nicest people in the world. So even if he had played him tough and ornery, it would have been fun and funny. It would have been more interesting.
Well, Robbie, I have this is my revelation. I just realized this now. I like, because he is a bit ornery in this episode. And we, and like you said, in that coat, when we first see him, I feel like the writers sort of abandoned that once Picardo took the orneriness into his his decision of how to play the doctor. And they were like, oh, well, if we have one guy with this character being kind of snappy back at people, we might as well not make Neelix that edgy guy. So I think we can blame this on Bob Picardo. And we'll talk to him about this. He took everything on the bridge, on the set, Neelix.
Speaking of Bob Picardo, so the doctor shows up and he says, I've been listening to your plan or your lack of plan, or at some point he just pops up and he knows what everyone has been talking about. And I was like, wait a minute, that's creepy too. Like, so the doctor all 7 years was able to just listen in to everybody's room because he's part of the computer. Like, that just seems wrong. So
he's Big Brother basically. But before he said that, he did say, one of you forgot to turn off my program. So he brought that up. But you're right. Okay. Like later on, he's never really turned off later, right?
No.
Always on.
So he listened to everything that B'Elanna and I did in our quarters?
Yes, ma'am. He did.
Yes.
Janeway's a pool shark. We didn't know that at
the
very end.
Did not know that. Crap. Also, Harry says he's going to ask Chakotay about animal guides. Harry said that. Did you ever ask Chakotay about your animal guide?
I never asked.
I don't think he did.
I'm sure they would have written it in as a panda because it was a Chinese animal.
Yes.
Found in the forests of China. So,
I have two last comments. One is when B'Elanna says, so you program this, Tom? And I said, yeah. And you program the pool shark? I say, yes. B'Elanna says, well, he's a pig. And so are you. I was like, yes, you're right. I am a pig. He's a pig. This whole story is a pig.
Yes.
The all of it. So that, yes, thumbs up to B'Elanna for calling it what it was. And Sandrine was going to teach you some things. Did she teach you anything, Harry?
She didn't teach me anything. I like when you first introduced me to her and she offers her hand for me to kiss it and I shake it, right? I shook her hand and that was a choice that I made as an actor. I said, I'm going to be so awkward and just shake this lady's hand instead of kissing it. Right before the pig comment, Gaunt Gary says to B'Elanna, is like his approach to women is treat a lady like a tramp and a tramp like a lady never fails. And I thought, wow, yet another horrible line. Like, but thank God they mentioned that you're the pig and that you program.
So
that was sort of the justification and validation at the end.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so I think we've covered that episode. Not my favorite episode, not my favorite episode.
What do you think was the underlying meaning or the underlying message from this episode, The Cloud?
I thought it was interesting that Janeway was willing to risk so much for the mistake that she had made. And I think that's a theme that she plays out a lot. Like if she feels responsible for a wrong in some way, she's going to make it right. Even if it means risking the entire ship and everyone's life, she's going to try to make it right. It's very heroic. That's very noble. I think in a way that's the theme to me, is like a theme of personal responsibility on some level of like, if I do something that's a mistake or that hurts someone else, I'm going to fix it. I'm responsible to fix it.
Okay. And in reference to fixing the nebula-like being, Correct. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go even further. I think it has to do with grief, because Chakotay talks about where the crew is sort of in a grieving session, basically the grief of knowing that we are so far away from home and that we may never get back home. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a period of grief, it's easy to sort of shut down everything and not interact with anything around you. Mm-hmm. And this episode sort of teaches that, yeah, okay, something bad can happen in your life. You can be upset about it. You can grieve about it. But the quickest way back to normality is to sort of find other things to do, like Shea Sandrine, like, you know, whatever it may be. Just go about doing something. Get active. Don't stay there and be this, you know, curmudgeon who's in the cave and doesn't want to socialize or anybody, you know.
That's interesting.
So, that's kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah, so. But I think you're definitely right. That's at that point in our show, there's a bit of grief and a bit of feeling lost and like, how do we create what's normal?
Right.
What's the new normal? Yeah.
Right.
Well, great. Well, thanks guys for sticking with us for our recap and our conversation. And again, I apologize for Tom Paris being a misogynist and a jerk and a pig, as Bellana said. He will redeem himself. Don't give up. Keep watching the show. He'll get better.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much for listening into our review of the episode, The Cloud. Next week, join us as we talk about the next episode, which is Eye of the Needle. Until then, live long and prosper.